Days of Light by Megan Hunter. Read by Stephanie Racine. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 5. What is all this juice and all this joy? Gerard Manley Hopkins. Spring. Day 1. Easter Sunday, 1938. When Ivy looked back, this was what she remembered. Joseph was singing. Here was a rare thing her brother couldn't do. His voice was tuneless, rambling, reaching for a note as though for a high ledge on a mountain. But the fact remained. Joseph, their own plain, sensible Joseph, was singing. He lay in his bed in the next room, the painted walls sentinel around him, his window ajar, already wafting sweetness. He was opening his wide lips, feeling the vibration build in his stomach, rise into his chest. Here was music. In his throat, on his tongue, whistling through his teeth. Ivy held her own breath to try to hear the song more clearly. It was a low, almost continuous sound, a bird on a summer night. An anonymous, homeless tone, the sound of yearning itself. Ivy pictured Joseph in his set at Oxford, the two little rooms with their air of adolescent disarray, his girlfriend a shape at the edges. Their father, Gilbert, had given him a gramophone for his 21st birthday, and surely Joseph would dance his girl around the study, taking care not to bump into the clumsy armchairs, the solemn wooden desk. Joseph was a good dancer. He would have his arm wrapped around her waist. Ivy could see the waist, its deep dip of invitation, its stretch into arm and shoulder. But above this was a blur. Joseph had never described this girl much beyond her name, Frances. And just once, after dinner and wine, lovely. Over time, Ivy had filled this blur with figures. A girl leaning to pick up a penny, rising like a child who has stamped her gumboots into a puddle with a loose opening smile. Or a more serious woman, wearing a beret at an angle, a cigarette tucked between her fingers, lips poised with experience. Sometimes the figure was simple, even incestuous. Herself or her mother. Ivy did not berate herself for this. After all, after today, these figures would vanish forever. Today, the real Frances would visit for Easter. Through her open window, Ivy could smell the goodness of the garden outside, the truth of another morning arriving. The birds made their expectant, nervous morning calls. Even they knew about this day, Ivy felt. They sensed its particular quality, how even at Cressingdon, the most secular house in England, Mother had once called it, Easter meant something. It meant something to the trees and to the greying statues of the garden, their subtle turns only children could see. When Ivy was 6 or 7, she had watched the small nymph by the pond turn and wink at her. It was, perhaps, the single most significant moment of her childhood. Magic proven, the shell of reality cracked. But when she tugged hard on her mother's skirts, Marina only said, "Of course, darling," and moved away. Ivy heard a noise from the kitchen below her. Anne would have been up for hours, taking the lamb from the larder, covering it with salt and herbs, hoping to disguise the way the air had already dried the meat a little. It would be a warm